So there are two types of work. Red work, which is the work to get stuff done, actually create value, actually do the work, coding or testing or creating the document. And blue work is the work that is discussing getting the work done, but not getting it done. So in the classic Scrum model, for example, backlog refinement, sprint planning, daily stand-ups, demo, retrospective, that'd all be blue work.
Let's look at one interesting characteristic of blue work versus red work. Red work is typically done by makers. And these are people that like to have long periods of focus to get their work done, right? Now, the blue work tends to involve managers. And managers live in a world of context switching. They are used to getting 15 minutes a day packing, switch, switch, switch. Manager is productive the more touch points he can have inside the organization. So one of the things I observed in the organization I'm working at, with each team at having a good maker-manager schedule, but then each team was involved in five initiatives. Each of these five initiatives needed its own refinement. Each of these five initiatives needed its own planning. So developers never had more than 1 hour. They're all shouting, I'm always in meetings.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast on enterprise agility brought to you by the Agility Crew. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Now let's join our crew for this week's episode.
Good morning, it's Ian.
It's Ricardo, good morning.
And good evening, it's Eric.
Yeah, you're in different time zone and it's, oh my goodness, too early good morning for me, but there you go, life is life. We got ourselves together. For any of our seasoned podcast listeners, this will be the first time Eric, Ricardo and Ian, we're traveling the world, mates. We're in completely different places and continents. All we could do to add to this is get someone from Australia to join us as well, and then we'd be mad, wouldn't we? Let's get a desk. This episode, we're going to talk about a lovely topic called red work and blue work. What's the balance? The title's probably something like red work and blue work, what's the balance? But we sometimes get the title edited afterwards, so anyway. So what's it about? So the basic thinking theory on this is really straightforward, is there are two types of work. Red work, which is the work to get stuff done, actually create value, actually do the work, coding or testing or creating the document. And blue work is the work that is discussing getting the work done, but not getting it done. Now, I'm not saying blue work isn't necessary at all, quite the opposite. So in blue work, you might do planning, you might do things like that. So it's discussing the work, but not getting the work done. So in the classic Scrum model, for example, backlog refinement, sprint planning, daily stand-ups, demo, retrospective, that'd all be blue work. That'd all be blue work. You're talking about the work, but you're not getting the work done. Yeah. The stuff in the middle of the loop, it's usually like an Amiga sign, isn't it? The stuff in there is getting the work done. Just looking at Scrum for a second, there'll be other layers of this we can get to, but just looking at Scrum for a second, when the founding fathers of Scrum got together, one of the things they were trying to do was limit the amount of blue work that you do. And so they came up with this, what we'll all understand across the industry is, for a two-week sprint, don't let your sprint planning be more than an hour. Don't let your demo be more than an hour. Don't let your retrospective be more than an hour. That was all to start getting that right. And I remember, so that's the background of this and the balance. It's the balance that's the issue. How much time do you spend in blue work? And I can tell you, companies I work for, so many companies where I turned up and I found, for example, in an organization of 400, about 100 were managers reporting to each other in layer on whether things were getting done or not by a very small amount of people who were actually doing the work at the bottom. And that was needed to get sorted. So that's the area. Does this make sense to everyone? Eric, Ricardo, do you get what we're up to and why it matters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally do. If you're not careful, you get inefficiencies built in and it just becomes unquestioned. And the next thing you know, you have your agile garden is just overrun with weeds.
That's a really good metaphor.
I'll tell a story. Let's all tell some stories. Here's my story. I arrived at a site once, Ministry of Justice site in the UK. They were in a bit of a mess. They were Scrum zombieing. No, I'm not going to go into the whole of the zombie LinkedIn thing that's going on with Scrum zombieing and how critical. But they were genuinely doing Scrum zombieing. So they were looking like they were doing the right things, but they weren't. So I arrived on site on the Monday and they said, we got three teams and we called them Alpha, Beta, Zeta. And they said, do you want to come and sit in on the Alpha planning session? And I went, yeah, sure. So I went in and they talked. So it was a 2-week sprint and they spent a day and a half planning the 2-week sprint. And I thought, ooh, this is in a bad state. Now, I will say that when you, just as you start sprinting, if it's sprinting, just as you start sprinting, maybe you need a bit more time to sort these kind of things out, but it's not the, so I went, oh, it's obviously a new team. And I know we've been doing this for 6 months. And I went, 6 months? 6 months and you're putting a day and a half into sprinting, into planning your sprinting? You know, what's going wrong? And actually what was going wrong when I found the bottom of it was the product owner was doing nothing about anything apart from in this meeting. So basically, he was doing all the refinement, all the discussion, everything that he wanted to do in that meeting. And, you know, day two for me was sitting down with a product owner and pointing out what his job was properly. And I used a classic sort of high performance circles model to talk to him. And I pointed out that the product owner, if he gets his job right, can double the productivity of a team. And I said, got to tell you, you're not getting your job right now. What you're doing is spending the time in sprint planning, telling everyone what you want for the sprint and no other time at all. And then spending the rest of your time moaning about the fact they're not delivering. It was a fantastic and classic issue. And by the way, it was his only job. Because occasionally you get these situations where the product owner has got another job somewhere and you've got to sort that out. This guy was employed only to have that job. So really poor. So that's a classic example of teasing out the impediments because of this ratio that was set up of, and you can apply it outside of Scrum to anything, 10% time talking about blue work, 10% blue work, 90% red work. And that's my story. How about you guys?
Yeah. I want you to finish that story a little bit though, Ian. Like what, after you pointed out his job, what, how did that transition happen?
Well, it was good. I had to enlist a few other people to sort of, as it were, marshal round him and make sure he understood what he got to do properly.
Was that his manager and HR?
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, he was a contractor, but you're completely right, Ricardo. It was actually, let's line everyone up so that he can't get out of this box I've got to put him in. Literally, I got to talk this through with a bunch of people, and I lined up his boss and his boss's boss and then HR and then a few other people, just so that by the time it didn't become Ian thinks this and I think this. It became, you know, we've all agreed here's the problem. Let's put it around. Let's get this right. And to be honest, that guy habitually did this. He improved immensely. And I put what I would call a quality index in. So every sprint, at the end of the sprint, we reported a quality number on how well the sprint was qualified or qualified. I don't know what the word is. But anyway, and it was a percentage out of 100. And 20% of the ratio to make that figure happen was whether we went into sprint planning correctly, did it for the right amount of time, and the items in the backlog got through on an invest sequence. Are they a quality check on them? And what I did with the team was I said, if you can't tick invest for the backlog item, throw it back into planning. And the product owner went, hang on a minute. You're telling me if I haven't got my stuff right, we won't be doing things in the sprint. What are the guys in the sprint going to do? And I went, not your problem. Your problem is getting the stuff right. So 20% of the entire quality number that came at the end of the sprint was based on this guy doing his job. And it was entirely a job of me organizing every lever there was to get him to do his job correctly, including some very visible ones. So a senior manager would get this. Here's the end of the sprint report. Here's everything we did. And here's the quality number for the sprint, and it was 62%. And they go, that's a bit low. No, yeah, the backlog setup didn't get any percentages at all in it this week, and the testing didn't do because of this. And they go, can you put those right? And I went, yes, that's what we're doing. We're improving. We're improving. We're maturing. And the percentage quality index became quite a thing that the senior managers looked at. Because it's really easy for senior managers to go, okay, whatever this grid is that Ian's created, it's giving us 62%. That can't be good. We've got to improve it. You know, we've got to improve it.
Yeah, I'm glad that I dug a little bit deeper with this, Ian, because this percentage quality index, I haven't actually heard about that. I've just heard like fist of five how you're feeling before going into the sprint. and then we can look at that later. But can you explain what else, aside from backlog quality and backlog readiness, was in your, what that you'd like to typically put in a percentage quality index? Because this is a really useful metric.
Well, I'll make a couple more and then we'll see what Ricardo's got up to on this, because I bet you he's done some stuff on this as well. The first one was, the big one was, because this was what was going wrong, I tuned this so a heavy part of the waiting was this guy's job, getting it right. If I'd arrived and he was superb at the job, I'd have given that 10% of the waiting. I gave it 30 so that his problem was really exposed. Yeah?
Okay, so that's really an important point. It's like when you go in, this is not a one-size-fits-all. You are looking at the situation very contextually.
Yeah, but the grid I used, it's weighted. So we could take it somewhere else and suddenly that weighting goes down from it's worth 20% of the overall score to it's worth 5% of the overall score, and everything else just carried on working. And one of it was how soon we got into testing within the sprint. Because another thing this company did was, and this happens all the time with two-week sprints, they go into it and the first 2 days is requirements gathering, and then the next 5 days is coding, and then the final day is testing, and everyone's frantically testing to try and finish it. So another indicator I put in was that we started testing by day five of the sprint to stop this mini waterfall happening.
Yeah.
So that's two that are good. There are others. What about you, Ricardo? Have you done anything like this?
I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction. You're talking about in a team. I've observed these at scale.
Yeah.
So, for example, let's look at one interesting characteristic of blue work versus red work. Red work is typically done by makers. And these are people that like to have long periods of focus to get their work done, right?
When you say makers, what we might call creators, yeah?
Yeah, could be creators, could be coders, could be designers, but it's typically people that want long stretches of time to be able to get in the zone and do some work.
Yeah, so just to summarize that, yeah, 1 hour a day every day is not the same thing as 7 hours one day where you can really get in and understand what it is. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We need to get into this in one episode about the maker schedule versus the manager schedule. Now, the blue work tends to involve managers. And managers live in a world of context switching. They are used to getting 15 minutes a day back, switch. Manager is productive the more touch points he can have inside the organization. Now, inside the team, if you look at Scrum has time-boxed the blue activities in a really clever way of letting long periods of work. So you say refinement is 2 hours per week and everyone joins together, the business owner or product owner, whatever you call it in that company. And you have the sprint planning at the beginning of the week, and then you have these long blocks of time for people to do their red work. One thing that companies don't take attention to is when they scale Scrum. So one of the things I observed in the organization I'm working at, they had gotten quite good inside each team at having a good maker-manager schedule, but then each team was involved in five initiatives. Each of these five initiatives needed its own refinement. Each of these five initiatives needed its own planning. So developers never had more than 1 hour. They're all shouting, I'm always in meetings. That's the symptom you find. Fixing this at scale was actually quite easy.
First, I want to know. Tell me how.
I'm waiting on bated breath here. I want to hear this one.
It was quite easy. We introduced a planning at scale, and we said planning happens. We have a follow-up for all projects, a 45-minute time box thing, which happens on Mondays. Tuesday, any refinement meeting that is across teams needs to happen on Tuesday afternoons. If it doesn't fit in the slot that we have for, then we have a slot on Wednesdays for planning across all teams. It's 2 hours and it's mostly the POs, but they do bring individual contributors. And the rest of the week is free for teams to play. So by moving all, there are a lot of ad hoc meetings. First of all, we created a 2 hour time box divided into 15 minute time slots that could be used for most of the small refinements. Because a lot of them, it's just a small discussion. So people started asking for a slot in that meeting where everyone is already coming anyway. But for the bigger things like a project kickoff, a big refinement across teams, walkthrough of a solutioning, we just said those happen on Tuesday afternoon. Then we engaged all the managers, explained to the managers why this was important. This increased productivity and happiness of the makers, but it forced the managers. We have a new guest on the podcast with a beautiful tail.
Yeah,
no,
sorry.
Lovely.
Freya, by the way. She's real attention seeking. She's on every podcast.
That's really cool. I love cats.
Oh my gosh.
I have one that came in good off the street. But the satisfaction on the developers went from, in the company survey, from like the 30s to the 70s by doing this. And to give you an idea, their predictability in terms of what they were planning versus what they were delivering over a year went from 38% to 92%.
So just to that's amazing, Ricardo. So just to recap, how often did those planning meetings happen? And it sounds like you protected people's times. If they're complaining about meetings, because oftentimes you just invite tap in and they go out everywhere and they feel compelled to say yes to all the invites. And then you get the converse of what happens. You have people encouraging people to just ignore meetings.
And then you don't have the right
people. I've had managers that say just, yeah. Right.
No, this was part of a multi-pronged approach to fixing. But if you think that I had three tracks of work, one of the tracks was fix the portfolio management. Another of the tracks was handle some big programs. And the third track, as important as those two, was enable the teams to work in peace. I had a different name on the slides that went to management, by the way.
This I find interesting. What was the name on the slide? Just out of, can you remember?
I have to go find the slide.
You have to find it, yeah. I do. By the way, I love the idea of enable the teams to work in peace anyway as a language point.
It was similar. Yeah. But
what would I say? You haven't said what it was. Let me quickly think. I think the sort of management version of that might be increase the productivity and efficiency of the team as they do the maker work.
Yeah.
Because the insight you've produced is fantastic. The idea that the managers who time slice impose that time slicing onto the makers is the joy.
I didn't come to that. I read something from some guy who might have created Salesforce or one of those companies, a really successful guy, and like an article from 2009 where he was talking about maker versus manager schedule.
Superb, yeah. Superb.
I'll find and the original reference.
Yeah, let's stick it out. And then time boxing again to force that move so that you give space for the makers to work at peace. I think it's great.
Yeah. But of course, you cannot just...
Yeah, the time boxing, I think, is key.
But if you just time box it and you don't get people to be more efficient at planning, so that then this came with creating great visualizations for the plan so that they could plan faster. This came with having people looking at the portfolio, etc. So if you just do the time boxing and you don't enable people to do the blue work in the time boxes, then it's going to spill over. So you have to work from multiple angles to make something like this work. It's really easy to say you can only have these meetings on this day, that day, and that day. But if you don't make those meetings be productive, they will still spill over because the blue work still needs to be done. In a way, I really like blue work because it's doing the right thing, and red work is about doing the thing right. And both are needed.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Ricardo, because I think oftentimes blue work gets a lot of flack and people don't like it. They think it's just wasted meeting time. And when you do it right and you set people up well with the blue work, it really frees them up their maker time, their red work time. You need to be well prepared so you don't have a day and a half planning for a 2-week sprint cycle like you were seeing, Ian, because they were putting everything off to that time.
When I see people needing 1.5 day of planning, sometimes my solution is to create design sprints. So you take that day and a half and make it into a mini sprint.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
A cure for that symptom, just a little aside.
Yeah, yeah.
There is but something that is happening for that day and a half to be needed. It could be a lazy product owner, like Ian was saying, it could be other things. Sometimes, imagine you're a lean startup And you don't know what you are building. It could be that you need a very short cycle of deciding what, and then a longer cycle, but you still need to make those iterative. It could be, it's like everything that we discuss. It depends. It could be good to spend 1.5 days of planning to do 5 days of work.
Here's a point I want to bring up on this, Ricardo, which is great, which is you sometimes what people do with blue work is they think if we talk about this enough, yeah, it'll become clear. Yeah. It'll become less complex. And really what you're doing, why don't we try and understand this better by creating 95 slides? In reality, the only time you'll understand it better is when you inject it into red work and do some discovery and find out what's really going on. And that's another symptom of this. Why do companies get, just remember this little model I started with, why do you spend a day and a half in planning? And the answer is, one of the symptoms is lazy PO guy. That's one. But another one is, habitually, all the managers spend all their time talking about things, not the efficiency of getting the focus. As you've said, Ricardo, you said it's not enough just to time box them to 2 hours. You've got to give them some kind of facilitation that means they're efficient for the 2 hours. Because it's a habit thing. You know, people in companies who are managers go to meetings and spend the whole meeting talking and not spend the whole meeting getting stuff done that lets the red work start.
Managed to get me to stay quiet. That means it was a very deep insight. I'm reflecting.
It wasn't, mate. I tell you what.
You can see the smoke coming up.
It blew his mind.
Yeah. But it's totally true. And people get the problem with Scrum and everyone calling these things rituals is that they do become rituals. People are doing planning because there is a planning meeting. They're not doing planning because they want to find the right thing to do.
Brilliant.
And it can be tricky with your recurring sprint iteration. I mean, you want to keep that so you have an empirical source of data, hopefully over time, right? The whole point of it. But things change. Like I'm thinking, for example, when I went into one of the newest teams that was just really cowboy. You know, they were just doing whatever they could, what was in front of them, and trying to get this new product coded up and out the door. And so they really didn't have much process at all, except they had a planning every single week. And it was really unneeded. Like planned every single week. And the first thing I did was I came in and I observed that. And then the next thing I was like, well, why don't we just try, let's give you guys a little bit of structure and give you a 2-week iteration and get rid of this pseudo Kanban thing you've got going on. Just try this and we'll just dump out one whole planning. And if, as long as we're prepared with our user stories, so they adhere to the definition you're done. They have great acceptance criteria. Their persona statements are clear and everybody understands them. The planning is going to go really fast, and that's exactly what we did. And I just had that planning time right away, but it had become habit and they had not questioned it. And it can just be really tough when you get into a groove to question stuff that you're doing. This is an old human story, right? So,
okay, we're about 24 minutes. We need to think about concluding. I guess the question I'd like to bring to us is I think let's just all do it from a different viewpoint. I'm going to do it from a viewpoint of the kind of people that I coach and teach. I think the insight I've picked up from the whole discussion is this point about the manager-maker mix and how managers impose slicing on makers and how that's got to change. And so I think my insight for any leader is to see that insight yourself and work out whether how you're organizing is imposing the time slicing onto the creators, the makers. That's my big moment from today's podcast. How about you, Eric?
Okay, two. One is just listening to how Ricardo was scaling up, getting a quality maker managing time, and that you need both of them. One's not bad and one's not good. And so that's actually something I'm going to go listen back to our own podcast, because I think we've got some really good nuggets in there and I layered to Ricardo. But the other thing is going into a new situation and establishing a percentage quality index to help shed light on some ineffective practices that may be expanding the blue work too much.
Yeah, okay.
I thought that was a really good thing that he did. So,
and me,
we got it?
I'm going to think, can I create that kind of quality index at scale? Because I never work with just one team. I tend to work with 20, yeah, 30 teams. But now, and that's the reason why I was flabbergasted, because I'm thinking, how do I create such an index that would help expose and fix, just like you did in that case, the lazy product owner? What are the problems and are we fixing them?
Actually took that quality index from one team, which I established it in, to 19 teams.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about it on another episode, because I'm really curious and I was going to do my own research. I'd much rather follow your footsteps and make brand new mistakes along the way, because I'm sure you already made some for me.
Yeah. Learn from my mistakes, then make your own. Learn from my mistakes, then make your own.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's the whole reason why we exist with this podcast. We share little nuggets and insights, and hopefully we don't have to totally reinvent the wheel each, right?
That should be our tagline. Great. Helping people make brand new and original mistakes.
Yeah.
That might be the title we get for this episode. That will create a bit of a fun. Okay, we're probably at time. This one I'll chair and call it and say we're done. 27 minutes is enough, surely. Thanks, Eric. Eric with a K.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Eric with a K.
Eric with a K. Thanks, Ricardo. You can get hold of us. How can you get hold of us? You can get hold of me from @Ian@BigAgility or my Substack, which is www.ianbanner.com. Ricardo, how can people get hold of you?
They can go to liberato.pt and then they can find all the other links from there.
Yeah, liberato.pt. You can get the Enterprise Mastery there. Eric?
I think right now the best way to get a hold of me is through my LinkedIn page. Just Eric. E-R-I-K Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, from Seattle. Find me there. I'm going to be getting some new social media up soon to make it a little bit easier.
Cool. All right, that's it. Here comes the man with the music.
Can I bob my head a little?
You don't need to, mate. I'll put it on afterwards.
I'll give you a recording of a bobbing head. With a bit of luck, it will still be more in sync than yours when you are bobbing it.
That's it for this episode. Why not check out our back catalog of previous episodes and show notes? Go to enterpriseagility.info to connect and sign up. See you next time on the Enterprise Agility Mastery Podcast.